The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 320 of the world's most dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me this week, the guru of RedsMinorLeagues.com and RedLegNation.com, my man Doug Gray. How are you today, Doug?
I'm pretty good, Chad. How you doing?
I'm making it. You know, this is obviously a strange time. Still no baseball. And not that we expect there to be any this week by this week. But, you know, just about every night I'm thinking, man, right now, sometimes I'll even check the proposed schedule to see who the Reds are supposed to be playing. I'm like, well, I'd be watching the Reds right now. And it's just, it's really weird to not have that on, at least in the background, on all these nights here in April. And kind of sad, huh?
It is. It's so strange because, especially for people like you and me, like I feel, and I'm sure for all the listeners too, like that's what we do. Like it may not be necessarily what everybody does specifically, like I do, as you know, a job for a living every day. But we kind of work around, and it's just in the background of our lives all of the time that hey, there's a Reds game at 7 o'clock tonight. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna get home from work, sit down, eat some dinner, turn on the Reds game and kind of go about my evening. And well, that's just sadly not happening right now.
Yeah, it's not. And it's true that, like I said, at the very least, it's on in the background. If I'm doing something else or whatever, it's always on in the background. So I thought the first thing we'd talk about here before we get into a little bit of a tiny amount of baseball news this week, not much, but a little bit. Before we get into that discussion, though, Doug, what have you been watching? Everybody's talking about what they've been watching. Without any baseball, it's really a strange time to be watching other things.
I have personally been trying to catch up on television that I had been slacking on. And I've been watching Kim's Convenience on Netflix.
What is that? I've never even heard of that.
It's a Canadian television show about a convenience store and the family that owns and operates it. It's fantastic. I love it. It's now got 4 seasons. It's an ongoing series, so if it's something that you know, maybe you would like to binge watch all the way through, you're not going to get a quote unquote ending because it's still an active series. But there's not exactly a full on storyline that's played through the entire thing either. It's a comedy. I really enjoy it.
It and sounds then, like complete garbage to me. I'm just going to tell you, it sounds awful.
Well, you're wrong again, Chad.
Canada has provided exactly one good thing to this country. One thing. And it's not okay. This show.
It's Joey Votto then, right?
Correct. That is correct.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm going to disagree with you that there's only been one good thing, but I'll accept that Joey Votto is a good thing coming from Canada.
What else are you watching?
And then I've been catching up on Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist because I'm a weirdo and that's okay.
Is Dave Matthews Band on Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist?
If they are, I have not come across them yet within the show. But
that'd be the final episode.
Yes, well, you know, I guess good for them that they haven't had them on yet. So
I guess, you know, I have a longstanding history of being anti television programs. Did you know this?
I did not. I thought this was going to be anti Dave Matthews Band, and I was really kind of strapping in for this story. But continue.
Listen, I take the abuse of our viewers every week over my love for Dave Matthews Band. I'm not going to hide from it here. I can't hide from it. But what I am against are these television programs. You know, they have these programs on the television. Did you know this?
I was aware. Yes.
Yes. Well, there's too many of them, and they require way too much of a time commitment for me.
I mean, you can break them up into little smaller chunks, like.
But there's just so many chunks.
There are many chunks. Yes, but I mean, if you've got 20 minutes here, 30 minutes there, you can make it work.
I guess,
especially in times like right now. What else you got to do, Chad?
That's true. I mean, listen, that's the best argument right now. But I just, you know, I finished my wife and I watched The Americans, which frankly was a very, very good show for those of you that have seen The Americans. But, you know, we started like 5 years ago and we literally just got finished because of the quarantine. Now, the final season was really, really good. I mean, I'm glad we did it, but we, you know, you get through season two and you're like, oh my gosh, we got another 14 seasons to go or how many ever it was. It's just, it's too much pressure.
Yeah, but who's in that show?
Nobody that I can think of.
No, nobody you can think of?
No. It's a good cast.
Yeah.
Is that one of your favorites? Is that one of your favorites that you're trying to tell me?
I'm saying that I would watch just about anything with someone that's in that show.
Including a Star Wars movie? She was in one of the Star Wars.
I mean, I would watch it, I guess, but I haven't, so.
That was the most recent Star War.
Yeah, there's my out. If I haven't seen the other ones, I can't watch that one.
There you go. Yeah, well, you can't see her face.
I guess she would have been like, what, two in the first one, so that wouldn't really.
Yeah, probably not even that old. So I do have, you know, there's some great shows that I've watched over the course of time, and I don't really want to start a new one unless it's like a real show. Like, you know, I love The Wire, and I love Mad Men, and, you know, unless you can promise me it's going to be that good, man, I'm not going to dig into six seasons of anything. It's just too much for me.
Yeah, there probably aren't that many shows that have six seasons that can be, you know, told to Chad that, hey, they're going to be that good. So, you know, in that scenario, I mean, you've probably got, what, like eight more shows to watch for the rest of your life?
That's fine. It's fine by me.
Yeah.
Because I've been watching movies. Seen some really good movies lately. Rewatched one of my all-time favorites, Badlands, starring a very young Martin Sheen and an even younger Sissy Spacek. Terrence Malick's first movie, Badlands. Oh, my goodness. Fantastic. Gimme Shelter, Rolling Stones documentary. You know, I was going to go see the Stones this summer.
Yeah, that sounds like a movie that would be made about right now.
Yeah, really. Gimme Shelter. That's a good point. I didn't think about that. All right. It was a really good documentary about the Rolling Stones. And what upsets me about the Rolling Stones is that I was finally going to get a chance to see them this summer for the first time ever. And if you'd have told me that there would have been health concerns and that was the reason why we weren't here going to see a Rolling Stones concert,
I would have thought very differently.
I would have thought it was going to be the band, not the audience. You know? So I have watched a couple of television shows. I mentioned on last week's episode that my wife and I, we did restart, and there's six seasons of this, but we've already watched them all and we know how great it is. So we don't mind rewatching it. And it's Northern Exposure for the early to mid 90s.
I still cannot believe that is not streaming anywhere. It's mind boggling.
It really is. And we finished the first two seasons now. And let me tell you, some parts of it are dated, but it's still laugh out loud funny. It's just a smartly written show, and I really like it. So the only other show that I've been watching off and on has been Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Makes sense.
Are you a fan?
I am. It's something that I'll usually turn on to kind of fall asleep to, and then the next thing I know, it's an hour and 10 minutes in. I'm like, this is the worst movie ever, but it's also the best show ever. So.
It's pretty good. It's fun to watch. And yeah, that's one that you can just sort of turn on and, you know, laugh a little bit and then fall asleep or whatever. All right. Enough of that nonsense. Let's talk baseball.
Yeah, baseball.
Baseball, oh, yeah.
I got excited. It's it's rough times out there, guys.
Baseball. You know, there have been all these plans thrown out for how to get baseball. And I don't know what ultimately the players, not just the players, but all the different competing interests around baseball. I don't ultimately know what's going to happen in terms of how it's going to happen if and when we have baseball. But I thought the most recent plan that was kind of leaked out, I don't know if they're leaking these to try to gauge public reaction or what's going on, but RJ Anderson of CBS Sports reported that one of the plans would be to have a three-state, play baseball in three different states. How did that breakout go, Doug? Because I know you wrote about it at redlegnation.com.
I mean, I think that, you know, we at this point, we've probably all heard about the Florida and Arizona plan where the teams would kind of just play out of their spring training facilities. And then, you know, in Arizona, they've got Chase Field. Over in Florida, they've got, you know, the dome in Miami. They've got a dome in Tampa or St. Pete, I guess, if you want to be more specific about it. But the new plan would also have they didn't announce how many teams that there would be, but a third site in Texas. They would play out of Arlington, where the Rangers were. Well, they were supposed to open a new stadium this year that has a dome, and they would also have, you know, the ability to travel to Houston and play games there in their dome for when they needed to have domes. So they would have three sites. Now, how that would work out if, say, they kind of had to play those three sites all year, there wasn't really any specific breakdown as kind of like how the playoffs would work in that kind of scenario, because basically you'd have three leagues. So maybe you'd have, you know, two wild cards, or maybe one or two wild cards, and somebody gets a bye or whatever for the first round of the playoffs. And I don't know. All of these ideas right now are just kind of things that they've thrown out there just to discuss. Nothing is even remotely close to being a quote-unquote final plan. I think that they're just kind of discussing ideas to see what they can come up with just in case there is a scenario that presents itself that, hey, we can go about playing baseball in the future.
So, you know, I think that I like the idea that they're discussing these things. They're ongoing discussions that are taking place, and hopefully even behind closed doors, making some decisions like, you know, if we can start by this date, here's the plan we'll use. Start firming up actual plans so they can hit the ground running, you know, do a spring training period again, and then get into it. I'm interested in how that would work out. We don't know. I want to ask you this, Doug, if you had to put a percentage on it, because I have an opinion as well. What's the percentage chance we get Major League Baseball this year?
I mean, I'd say like 25%. I may be very pessimistic about it, but I just don't feel great between what the players have said about basically, or at least enough of the important players in baseball have said about basically quarantining themselves away from their friends and family for such a long period of time. I don't feel too confident about it.
My opinion is this, Doug. Here's my hot take. 100%. 100% guaranteed. There's going to be baseball in some form or fashion this year. That's my prediction.
Well, that's very different than my number. So, yeah.
I can't see, you know, they're starting baseball in other places. And of course, they're ahead of us in terms of where the quote unquote curve is in, you know, Korea and well, who knows about China, but Taiwan though. Taiwan did evidently do a pretty good job. With that, so they're ahead of us, but they're already getting started with their plans, and I can't see with this much money on the table, and I just can't see, and the way things are going in America, which is not great, but it's, you know, the thing is sort of hitting, like some of the models sort of predicted, no single model has ever been correct, but I don't know, I don't see any way they go. I mean, we're talking about all the way, you know, through the end of, you know, well, the end, if they talked about the season ended in November or something like that, maybe pushing it off. I just don't see them not playing any, even if it's a 30-game season, I think they're going to play some baseball. That's my opinion.
I hope so. I really do, because that means a lot of good things are going on that, you know, aren't happening right now. But like I said, I'm probably just a big pessimist on this one.
Well, maybe I'm being overly optimistic. I don't know. And you.
I'll go ahead and say you're being overly optimistic at 100%. If you had said 90, I'd give you a little bit of wiggle room there. 100% is basically guaranteeing it, Chad.
That's exactly what I'm doing. I am guaranteeing there will be Reds baseball this year. The universe can't do this to Cincinnati. Finally, the Reds and the Bengals both start spending a little money. The Bengals are going to get a big quarterback. I mean, they can't take this away from us. The universe can't be that cruel, can it?
Have you been around Cincinnati sports? Of course it can.
Yeah, that's a solid point. It's a solid point. What out of Cincinnati sports would, for the last three decades would make me think anything different? Let's talk about not the Red Stockings, who we've been talking about, but the Red Sox. Just very briefly here, Doug. Because, man, Major League Baseball really came down hard on the Red Sox this week, didn't they?
They did something. You know, for those who may have missed it, which is understandable, it seems like Major League Baseball kind of tried to bury this one a little bit. The Boston Red Sox were punished for their role in stealing signs, much like the Houston Astros got punished back in January for. Except for, unlike the Astros, they didn't even really get punished much. Not that I think that the Astros got punished nearly enough, but, you know, the Red Sox were using cameras during the game to steal signs and relay them to hitters. Sounds a lot like what the Astros did, right?
Sounds pretty close to it.
Well, apparently Major League Baseball wants us to believe that it wasn't quite like that. Apparently because they didn't use it as often and they weren't as successful in using it, They got punished way less. They had to give up a second round draft pick this year, and then the video replay guy was suspended for this year, and next year he's not suspended. He's just not allowed to be the video replay guy. That was the extent of their punishments.
Yeah, but that guy really loved being the video replay guy, and he's had it taken away from him.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, and here's where it gets even more fun. Alex Cora, who was the manager for the Boston Red Sox during the 2018 season when this took place, was also the bench coach for the Houston Astros in 2017 when they were doing all of their trash can banging. Somehow, we're supposed to believe that Alex Cora had no idea that this was going on in Boston. He was suspended for the 2020 season, but it was very explicitly in the report that it was only because of his role in Houston. Now, he did agree to depart ways with the Boston Red Sox back in January when all the Houston Astros things came out, so he is no longer employed by the Red Sox. But, yeah, I really struggle to figure out how I'm supposed to believe that nobody in the entire Red Sox dugout, other than the players and the video guy, knew that they were stealing signs and relaying them in real time. Like, how insane do you think that I have to be that they wouldn't – like, how does the manager not understand that there's some guy yelling down the dugout to our players what sign's coming, and then those guys are relaying it for him to not understand what's going on? Like, I just it doesn't pass the sniff test. There's no way he didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And it's, you know, to be even discussing this is kind of right now seems like it's kind of like, you know, in politics, you always hear about the news dump on Friday evening or you know, you dump bad news when nobody's paying attention or when something else has taken up all the oxygen in the room. And right now with all this stuff going on right now, I think you're right. Major League Baseball tried to kind of sneak it through because no, who cares at this point? We just want baseball. So
we do want baseball. You hear that, guys?
Can we do this? Yes, 100%. Okay. Now, we have a couple of topics I wanted to talk about. We've got some viewer mail questions, Doug. But first, I want to get into what I think, and I'll tell you why I think it's really fun. But it's a really fun series that you've been doing at RedsMinorLeagues.com. And I want to ask each of you, go to RedsMinorLeagues.com and read this series and everything else Doug's doing over there, even during all this strange time. A lot of good content there and at RedLegNation.com. But you've been doing what you've called a farm system season of the decade. And I bet you'll know which one, but one of the names that you did on this farm system season of the decade was a guy that I like. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I'm talking about the one I wrote today with Robert Manuel, the reliever who got the nod for the early 2000s, right?
Absolutely, Robert Manuel.
I knew it.
Oh, man, he was great.
Yeah, he had a really good season in 2008.
He did. No, that's not really what I'm talking about, obviously, and you know that. It's, the best offensive year of the 2000-2009 decade, which, of course, is my man Adam Dunn. And I was glad to see you write that, and I'll let you talk a little bit more about it in a moment. But I remember at the time just thinking, I've not seen in my lifetime, because obviously, you know, I didn't get to watch George Foster smacking home runs. So I've never seen anything like what we had there as he was just about to emerge in the big leagues. Now, he wasn't the best player. Like, you know, he wasn't an elite prospect like Jay Bruce went coming through, you know, the number one overall prospect. But man, just in terms of sheer power, I was really mesmerized by this guy at a time when, you know, we had some big home run numbers. But Adam Dunn, I think you said in your piece, he was the number 33 overall prospect in baseball coming into that 2001 season. So that's pretty good. But he hadn't played in higher than A-ball. Is that right?
That is correct. And that was such a weird time back then, because at the time, well, I guess 2001 was the first season for a couple of years where the Reds actually did have an advanced A baseball team. But Adam Dunn played two seasons in 99 and 2000 in low A baseball because the Reds didn't have an advanced A team. So he kind of repeated A ball in one sense, but that was only because the Reds didn't really have an option other than skipping him up to double A as a 20-year-old, which they didn't want to do.
So he did get to double A as a 21-year-old, right? Did he start the season in Chattanooga?
Yeah.
They were still Chattanooga back then. Yeah.
Yes.
Was clearly ready at age 21 for the Southern League, wasn't he?
He was. He may have been ready for, you know, the major leagues. If we're gonna be perfectly honest with it, for what he did that season, I mean, I mean, I'll just throw it out there overall. I mean, the guy hit 334 with a 444 on base percentage, and he slugged 671. And, you know, his OPS in double A was 112, and in triple A it was 119. Or, I'm sorry, 1,112 and 1,119.
That's a little better, yeah.
Yes. I mean, he was just unbelievable at both levels. I mean, there wasn't a time where he went through any sort of slump whatsoever.
And so he got pushed up to Triple A Louisville before in the first half of the season still, and just again more of the same. I mean, it's crazy to look at his numbers at age 21.
Yeah, I mean, if you count every game that he played professionally that year, starting in Double A, going to Triple A, in the majors, he played in the Futures game and he played in the Triple A All Star game. He hit 54 home runs that season as a 21-year-old in 162 games.
And really forced his way. You're right. I think that, you know, probably in their plans, I mean, obviously they'd kept him 2 years in A-ball for a reason. But in their mind, they thought, well, Double-A this year, we'll move him to Triple-A next year. And instead, he forces his way to the major leagues and doesn't leave for, you know, another like 20 years, however long he played.
Yeah, I mean, the Baseball America scouting report on him after that 2001 season, you know, they noted in the Southern League write-up that the Reds' plan was to keep him in Double-A all year. Like, you know, he's 21 years old, and he was a very good prospect, but, you know, he's 21 years old. You keep him in Double-A all year, and he performs well. That's better than you expect out of someone. Well, yeah, as we found out, he changed those plans before the end of May. It was in Triple-A. So, you know, you mentioned earlier the whole, you know, he wasn't quite the Jay Bruce prospect, and I don't know if he was or wasn't really the Jay Bruce caliber prospect. We never really got to find out because – you know, going into the season was the last time he was prospect list eligible. He was never really given the opportunity to be voted on or judged as, you know, a better prospect than that because he was in the major leagues before the year was over.
Yeah, if he stays that whole season in Double A, he's probably a top five prospect or something at the end of that year.
And I mean, you know, for anybody who doesn't remember early years Adam Dunn, he wasn't the big slow guy that we saw towards the middle and end of his career. You know, he's a big guy. He's 6'6", probably 240 as a rookie, but he could run when he was young. He was athletic still when he was young. He's a very different player than, you know, maybe some of the listeners or viewers, I should say, may remember.
Well, think about him. You know, he got a scholarship to play quarterback for the University of Texas. Now, we're not talking about, you know, Podunk University.
I remember when they were good at football.
Right. At one time, it's hard to believe now, I guess. No, they were good, and I think he backed up Major Applewhite there at the time, if I remember correctly. But he was
that sounds right.
Yeah, legit D1, you know, power conference quarterback, and you know those guys aren't necessarily Deion Sanders in terms of speed, but you got to be athletic to play quarterback at Texas. You know, you can't just be, you know, Adam Dunn from his later years, which people remember. I love Adam Dunn. I always loved him. I think he's only become my favorite, like all time favorite player in the conversation with Larkin. In the last few years, just because every time his name gets mentioned, people just yell at me about how much they hated Adam Dunn.
People are weird, Chad. And I get it for anybody that's listening saying, really, Doug, you're saying that? I get it. I'm weird, too. But people are weird, Chad.
Yeah, so go Dunner. All right. There is one other sort of current baseball/minor league topic I want to get into you with you in just a moment. When we get into some viewer mail, we had a question about the, you know, minor league baseball agreement and what's going on with all that. So I'll give you that to you in a moment. But first, I want to discuss something that we talked about on our last podcast. And those of you that are loyal listeners to the podcast, loyal viewers of the podcast, you'll know that we did, Jason Linden and I did a draft. And we drafted out full squads of post Big Red Machines. Big Red Machine players. And clearly, I thought my team was superior. I knew we couldn't play any defense, but I knew we were going to mash. And Jason, you know, he does what he does. He talks and tried to claim his team was better. And so we finally figured out a way to play it out. And we're four games into that series. Have you been following that series on the Twitters?
I really have. It's been fun. Even though I definitely sympathize with Jason, but we'll get into that a little bit more.
Yeah, I thought quickly. Hopefully, I will get Jason on next week after we finish this series. Although it's almost over, but we are four games in, and I'll just quickly. We're not going to belabor too many of these, but I want to go ahead and tell you what's happened. If you weren't following on Twitter, or in our Red Leg Nation Radio Slack channel where we've been talking about it. Let me tell you how it went. Game one of the season. Let me just, I've got it pulled up right here. Oh, man, it was an incredible pitching matchup. Jose Rijo was for me and Johnny Cueto for Jason. And so I thought, oh, this is gonna be a really good game, you know, two of the better pitchers, really probably the two best pitchers, I guess, since the Big Red Machine, and maybe even longer than that, although some other names are gonna, you know, have a something to say about that, I guess. But you know, for my money, they're in the conversation for the two best probably since 1950 for the Reds, wouldn't you think?
I'm having problems figuring out anybody that's got a better career. I mean, there were probably a few guys along the way who could match a season or two, but not what those guys both did for their careers as Cincinnati Reds now.
Well, you know, in the first inning of the game, Cueto looked pretty good. He got Larkin, Sean Casey, and Kevin Mitchell out 1-2-3. So that's, you know, that's not bad.
But I mean, that's basically what Pedro did in the 99 All-Star game, right?
There you go. Exactly. Bottom half, Rijo comes in and issues a base on balls to Bip Roberts to start the game. So I'm thinking, oh my goodness. Now let me explain how I simmed these. I basically put the two, we're using out of the park baseball. Are you familiar with out of the park baseball, Doug?
Yes.
It's a really in-depth simulation type game for people that want to like be a GM of their team. You can do it, but it's also got a good historical way to do historical sims. And so I was allowed to put together two teams essentially, and I'm just playing them. And so I set both teams to let the computer, the game actually, the AI within the game, control both teams. So I wasn't making any decisions on these games other than just putting in the starting lineups that Jason and I selected and the rotations and bullpens and benches. Just plugged them in and let it go.
I for some reason, following on Twitter, I feel like Jason doesn't believe you.
Jason doesn't believe me. And we'll get to the reason why in just one moment. So Rijo, and we're not going to go inning by inning here, obviously, but I want to set the stage here. Rijo, base on balls, gets Joey Votto to fly out second, and then Eric Davis grounds into a double play, 6-4-3. So exit velocity was 105.6 miles per hour on that ground ball to shortstop. It's a very detailed game.
Yep.
So we go to the top of the second, 0-0, and, you know, I don't know if these teams are, I mean, I felt like my team was better, but I felt like they were probably close. And the one way I could get accused of cheating would be for who to hit the home run to give me the lead in the first game.
Who hit the home run?
Adam Dunn. First pitch to Adam Dunn. He turned Johnny Cueto around. Only 92.5 miles per hour exit velocity, but it goes 401 feet because he's Adam Dunn. So
he's got that big guy strength.
Oh, man. So the calls that I'm cheating start coming immediately as we're broadcasting this out on Twitter. Come on. It's not me. It's just the fact that I picked a better team than Jason.
So, I mean, that's one argument.
That is the argument. King Griffey Jr. flies out. Chris Sabo flies out, but with two outs. My guy Brandon Phillips singles up the middle. Jason LaRue, noted slugger Jason LaRue in his first at bat of the series, two-run home run. 3-0, Chads.
Oh. I'm sorry, Jason. I'm sorry.
You're not really. I'm really.
I'm really not. It's fake baseball.
It's fake baseball. And so ultimately what happens here is, let's see. Trying to find the next. Well, there you go. Barry Larkin scores. Jose Rijo scores. What ends up happening essentially is that I win the game. I score two more in the fifth, one in the ninth, and my team wins. 6-0. Excuse me. 6-0. 6 runs on 13 hits for my team.
Blowout.
It was a blowout. Rijo pitches a 4-hit shutout. I mean, come on, Jason. You could have picked Rijo.
That's what he'd have been my number one pick. With all due respect to Johnny Cueto, he'd have been the first pitcher I'd take.
Well, he was the first pitcher I took, but there was a Jason took. We both took position players first.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You're going to get more out of them in a short series, probably.
Right. So Jason picking Joey Votto instead of Jose Rijo with the number two overall pick. Although then he picked Eric Davis third, so he went with two position players, and that's when I grabbed Rijo at fourth. So anyway, he pitched well. He was the number one star of the game, according to this. Brandon Phillips was 3-for-4, 2 runs scored, and Adam Dunn, 2-for-4, home run, 2 RBIs. So, yeah, pretty good, huh?
It'd be fun to watch.
I guess, but it got a little crazier. Okay, it got crazier. In the second game, this was going to be Luis Castillo was starting for Jason, and Mario Soto started for me. And essentially, I scored a run in the first. Barry Larkin hit a leadoff home run. But then Jason took control. He scored one in the second, one in the fourth, one in the fifth, one in the sixth. And so we're going to the top of the ninth, and I'm down 4-1 at that time. And things are looking pretty bleak. Jason brings in his closer, Rob Dibble.
He was pretty good.
He was good. He gave up 3 hits and 4 runs and didn't get a batter out.
So he wasn't good on this day.
He was not. Scott Williamson then relieves him. Scott Williamson gives up 3 hits and 3 runs and does not get a batter out. By the time John Franco comes in and ends it, I've scored 9 runs in the top of the ninth, or 8 runs in the top of the ninth to go up 9-4. That's how I ultimately won. But the big one was when it was 4-1, the first 3 hitters got on, and then Mike Cameron came up to pinch hit. You remember Mike Cameron?
I do. Of course, I unfortunately remember Mike Cameron more as a not red than a red, but yes, I remember Mike Cameron.
Yeah, I took him from my bench because, man, that 1 year he was with the Reds, he was really good.
He was. He really was.
Yeah, I remember him fondly, and he hit a grand slam to give me the lead. It was great. So that's when the calls about me cheating really started to come hot and heavy because I scored 8 runs in the top of the ninth. I let Jason get really close to it and then pulled it away from him. Now, Doug, do you think I'm cheating?
I have faith that you're being honest with this one.
Well, I definitely am. So much so that I found myself after that kind of rooting for Jason a little bit, so I quit hearing the calls about me cheating. But then I think Jason cheated in Game 3. Now, who were our starters in Game 3? I think it was Jason had Bronson Arroyo going. No, that was the last game, Game 4. Jason had Sonny Gray. And I had Danny Jackson, 1988 Danny Jackson.
Ooh. Now, did you get first half Danny Jackson? Second half Danny Jackson.
Full season Danny Jackson. Mm. The way we picked these, I mean, we picked our teams, and we really didn't have a sense of whether we were choosing for career player or for a single, you know, peak performance. But the way I had to put the players on the roster was I basically had to pick their best year. And so I picked literally 1988 Danny Jackson. For Sonny Gray, I could only pick 2019 because that's his only year with the Reds. So it had to be their best year with the Reds. Jason gave me some of his thoughts on there were a couple that he didn't want, one or two that he didn't want the peak year. He wanted a different one. Like Joey Votto, he wanted 2012 Joey Votto, which is not his highest WAR season, but you remember how good he was before he got hurt, right?
Yes.
So anyway,
he was on pace for 912 doubles that year, right?
Again, I think you're being a little bit conservative with your estimate.
I'm not good at math.
Evidently. So I'm up 2-0, and I'm rolling here. I jump out in the first inning of Game 3 and score 4 runs. Barry Larkin, another leadoff home run, and score 4 runs. In the next inning, Barry Larkin comes up again and hits another home run. I'm up 5-0 in the middle of the second inning. Unbelievable. And here's where I started kind of rooting for Jason a little bit. I was like, oh, this really looks bad. I mean, I like Jason. I don't want to – I mean, I know my team's better, but I don't want to destroy him. So this would have been a really fun game to be at. Essentially what happens is Jason scores 3 in the 7th, 2 in the 8th, 1 in the 9th, and he wins. 6-5, Cal Daniels hit a walk-off single to win the game.
Cal Daniels could hit.
Yeah. The comeback was started, but gosh, couldn't Cal Daniels hit? My goodness. Yeah, he got peak Cal Daniels, Jason did, who ended up being good. Ryan Friel hit a 3-run home run, actually, to get Jason back within 2 runs.
And then that gets you back for your Jason LaRue home run. So
that's true. We got a Ryan Friel. And then another big hit that actually gave him the lead, or no, tied the game, was a Zach Cozart with a 2-run double. So he gets an awful start from Sonny Gray, ending in 2/3, 6 hits, 5 earned runs. And I get a decent start, a quality start from Danny Jackson, but Jeff Shaw and Aroldis Chapman blew it for me. So, oh, I forgot to mention, you know who got the win in Game 1 for me?
Who's that?
John Koutlangas.
I remember John.
You remember John Koutlangas?
I do. I feel like I typed that name about 100 times over a 2-year stretch, and every time I had to check it to make sure I was spelling it correctly.
Don't want your autocorrect to mess up on that one.
I'm not even sure autocorrect existed back then. Yeah. And that wasn't even that long ago. I feel like that was only a decade ago.
When Coot Langus, he didn't actually get the win, but he did appear and finish out the game in that first. He didn't get the win. I take that back. But he asked on Twitter, who did I strike? He struck out two batters that inning. He struck out Jay Bruce and...
What did he say about Jay Bruce striking out? I feel like he said it's pretty easy, right?
Yeah, he said no sweat or something like that. Yeah, striking out Jay Bruce, big deal. Anybody can do that. Which is true. Jay Bruce struck out a lot. So anyway, Jason comes back and gets the walk-off. And cuts it to 2-1 now. So I'm up 2-1 coming into game four. And here's where Jason had Bronson Arroyo and I had my guy Aaron Harang. So teammates facing each other. Now, who do you take in the peak Aaron Harang versus peak Bronson Arroyo? Who would you take?
I'm taking Aaron Harang. All due respect to Bronson Arroyo, who was very good. Aaron Harang was my guy.
Yeah, Arroyo may have been my favorite player at that time on the Reds, and he was really good. And I look forward to seeing him getting inducted into the Reds Hall of Fame at some point. But, yeah, Harang had an argument to be the best pitcher in the National League for, you know, about an 18-month period, basically. So Jason jumps out to a 3-0 lead after two innings. Then in the fifth, Eric Davis hits a 2-run home run. I end up scoring 3 to tie the game. And then I score – or no, I said that completely the wrong way.
No. You hit the home run.
Yes. I scored 3 in the first 2 innings. All right. I had Tucker Barnhart, Brandon Phillips, and Barry Larkin doubled in the first 2 innings and ultimately came out with 3 runs. So I'm up 3-0 on my way to going up 3-1. And then Jason comes back. He scores 3 in the fifth on Eric Davis's 2-run home run was 2 of those 3 versus Aaron Harang. Then in the seventh, he scores 2 more. And so now he's up 5-3 as we go to the ninth. And in the bottom of the ninth, King Griffey Jr. with a 2-run triple off John Franco to tie the game in the bottom of the ninth with 2 outs. It's amazing. My team is unstoppable.
It seems that way.
So they go to extra innings, and in the top of the 11th, oh, man, Joey Votto, 2-run single versus my guy John Coot Langus. John Coot Langus.
Stupid Canada.
Exactly. Votto. But then in the bottom half, I score 1, and then King Griffey Jr., a 2-run walk-off bomb versus Scott Sullivan. So John Coot Langus gets the win in game 4. Scott Sullivan with the loss.
King Griffey Jr. was good.
King Griffey Jr. was good. So anyway, that's, again, we've probably belabored that point way too much, but I'm up 3-1. Maybe tomorrow sometime. I don't know. I'm going to sim game 5 because I assume I'll win game 5 and the series will be over. So you're at this point, you agree that my team is by far the best, right?
I mean, how many Hall of Famers does your team have?
All of the Hall of Famers.
And how many does Jason's team have?
0 of the current Hall of Famers.
I mean, I'm not a doctor, but one of those feels a little bit better than the other.
Yes, absolutely. So, of course, there's only one Hall of Famer. That's Barry Larkin. But all right, so...
What?
There's only one Hall of Famer.
Are you sure? Who hit a walk-off home run for you in game 4?
Oh, my goodness. I've got 2 Hall of Famers.
Chad, what are you doing, man?
Did King Griffey Jr. make the Hall of Fame? Was he good enough to make the Hall of Fame? I feel like he kind of might have gotten ignored by the writers.
Ignored by a few of them.
Well, yeah, which is ridiculous. But, yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that. And he's got, Jason has, of course, Joey Votto, who I believe will be in the Hall of Fame, although missing part of this season is not going to help his counting numbers.
I agree. Who was it? Somebody at Fangraphs actually wrote about that, that it maybe missing this season, if they don't play at all, could be one of those things that kind of puts Joey Votto on that counting stats threshold because...
Yeah,
because he has walked so much, he's not racking up hits like your typical Hall of Famer. Now, personally, I have faith that the writers in, you know, let's say, you know, 14 years or so from now, they'll understand what was going on and how important all of those walks were versus, you know, just racking up a few extra hits here or there that he'll still get in. But I guess we're all going to have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah, I think the Hall of Fame voters are getting every year a little bit more, a little bit smarter, a little bit more informed. So,
and I think it also helps out that they kind of, I guess they're eliminating voters who haven't covered baseball in a certain amount of time too. So you have less of the old crew who, you know, hasn't covered baseball in 25 years still voting on these things that may not exactly be on top of modern statistics.
Exactly. Exactly. So, all right, one more quick thing before we get into a few viewer mail questions. But, you know, I've enjoyed simming this series against Jason, mostly because I've been beating the pants off him. And so I've been thinking about is there another kind of simulation I could do? And this game, which is a fantastic game, out of the park. You can set up a tournament between like historic teams. And I thought, why don't I set up like an 8-team tournament of the best 8 teams in Reds history and, you know, just see how bad the 75 Reds beat everybody else. So, or the, you know, 2004 Reds. No, they're not going to make the final 8.
That would be a bloodbath for that 2004 Reds team.
Yeah, maybe we should put one of those teams in just so that Adam Dunn can be in this tournament.
Yeah, I like the way you think.
So my thoughts were, if we're going to pick 8 teams, for example, that's just a random number. Let's take the 5 teams that won a championship for the Reds and supplement with 3 others. If you had to pick one of those other 3, who do you think would be your top choices, maybe the best Reds team other than the ones that won championships?
You know, my heart says 99, but my brain says 94.
Yeah. With me, I wanted to say 95.
I can go with that.
But that 94 team, I think, was probably a slightly better team than the 95 team. If you just look at the actual numbers, run differential, things like that. If you go by Pythagorean win-loss percentage, and go look that up if you don't know what it is, but it surprised me. If you're just looking from 1900 on, the top 4 teams by Pythagorean win-loss percentage, by what their, you know, record should have been based on the runs scored and runs against, it amazed me. 1919, 1975, 1976, and 1940. And what do those teams have in common?
They won.
They won World Series, yeah. I mean, it's the only team that it was not in there that won a World Series for the Reds, obviously, was 1990. And they're way down the list on Pythagorean. They're actually barely ahead of the 2010 Reds, who were good, but we wouldn't consider among the best teams.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's going to sound weird, but, you know, the 90 team only won 91 games. I mean, that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. That'll win you a division most years, but it's not like they went out and were just dominating everybody all year and won, you know, 100 games like, you know, the Big Red Machine teams were doing. I mean, heck, even, you know, the 2012 Reds, what did they win, 97 games that year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there was a big difference between 97, 98, 99 wins and 91 wins.
So you would add 94. If we're going to do this, you would add 94 be your selection.
I think so, yeah.
Would you yell at me if I picked 95?
I would not.
What about 2012? You just mentioned them. Would you put them in this conversation?
I think they have to be in the conversation at least, right?
Well, they're in the conversation, I mean, but let me just say one thing I should have said before is I'm trying to eliminate any other Big Red Machine teams. We've already got the 2, so let's spread it out a little bit.
I mean, I don't think anybody would really argue if you said that, you know, 3 of the 4, you know, Big Red Machine teams deserve to be in here. I mean, you know, they won 2 World Series. They were in a couple more. I mean, they're very good. Obviously, they're called the Big Red Machine. I mean, you don't get a nickname for being mediocre.
Yeah, you know, you look at like I said, by Pythagorean one loss, and the 1970 Reds, 1972, 1973, 74 are all right up there with the 75, 76 teams. I mean, so they were pretty good. Is there any other teams that jump out to you?
I mean, I think about the other teams that, you know, they went to the World Series and lost. You know, you've got the 39 Reds, the 60 Reds, but, you know, those were well before my time. And I don't have the same kind of memories I do with, you know, the mid-90s Reds, the late 90s Reds, that 2012 team.
Yeah, you know, maybe the best way to do it would be maybe go 2012 and 2012 and say 99, just because that spaces it out a little bit from 1990, whereas 94, 95 are still relatively close to and had some of the same parts as 1990. Not a ton, but some. And then maybe go for, you know, 39, obviously they lost in the World Series, but they won the next year. So we're taking 1940. Maybe we go with like 61, where they lost to the Yankees in the World Series. Something like that. I don't know. Just trying to think of something fun to do. So, I don't know. I just want him to play baseball. Let's answer some questions, shall we?
We shall.
All right. Before we get into our questions here, and the first set of questions will come from our friends at patreon.com/redlegradio. Patreon.com/redlegradio, where you too can support the podcast. First, I got to give a big thank you to my guy, Rich Brown, new patron, new supporter of the pirate ship on patreon.com. Really appreciate your support, Rich. Now, as is our custom, Doug, every time we get a new supporter, we have to give him a position on the field. Rich Brown. I feel like he's a manager, actually.
I was going to go a different direction than that, but I when I think Rich Brown, I think of like a 1940s relief pitcher who's got an awesome mustache, but he keeps a little bit of like Vaseline at the end of that mustache, and he's got a really, really fantastic breaking ball.
Oh, yes. And he's one of these, you know, Hoyt Wilhelm type relievers that pitches, you know, a ton of innings. Oh, man. And I love the idea of the mustache and just a little something there, a little something extra, get a little hop on his pitches. Yes, Rich Brown is a relief pitcher, a very good relief pitcher from 1942.
I love it.
All right. Rich, thank you so much and for supporting us. And I want to thank all of our patrons that even during this time with no baseball, and we're continuing to gain supporters and nobody's checking out on us. And I just really appreciate everybody. We have really fun conversations on our Slack channel. And anyway, thank you all. Let's get to our questions now. The first comes from, I really dreaded saying this, but the first question, our viewer mail, comes from Joe Farsing. Joe Farsing, who often has farcical questions for the podcast. Favorite musician for the quarantine, Rubella Fitzgerald, Syphilis Collins, or Yoko Mono?
I'm going to let you go first, Chad.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Syphilis Collins.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, I mean, you know, Phil Collins was a drummer, and he was in Genesis, and that's really neither of those are reasons to pick him, but Yoko Mono broke up the Beatles, so I'm not going to go with her.
Fair enough.
You taking one of those, or you're just going to let us go on to it?
I'm just going to let it go on. I'm sorry, Joe. I got nothing here.
That's a good one, Joe. All right, Rich Thompson. Rich Thompson asks, as a typical Rich Thompson, I'm a big fan of Rich Thompson, by the way, but he typically has some wordy questions that pose a scenario for us. Here's the scenario. You're walking the banks of the Ohio River near Great American Ballpark, where you discover an old and crusty bottle. Rich is a novelist. He wants to be a novelist, clearly. I love it. Naturally, you're curious to see what's inside, so you decide to pop its top to take a peek. When you do, a puff of red smoke bellows out of it, and a genie appears. No, it's not a genie like from I Dream of Genie. Oh, that's unfortunate. But it's a genie more like the dugout wizard from the Baseball Bunch. Wasn't that Tommy Lasorda? Ugh. Worst genie ever. So, the genie says this to you. Thank you for releasing me from bottles. Reward. I'm going to give you a perfect moment in time. I can tell you love baseball and the Reds. Therefore, for your perfect moment in time, I'm going to bestow upon you the hitting ability of any Reds player of your choosing for one at bat against any pitcher of your choice in the history of Major League Baseball to test your prowess. So, Rich, which Reds hitting ability do you choose, and which pitcher do you want to face for your perfect moment in time? So, the pitcher doesn't have to be a Red, but which hitter in Reds history would you choose for your one at bat if you could be that person for one at bat?
Do you want to go first, or can I go first?
Go ahead.
All right, I'm going to cheat, Rich, and I'm sorry, but he was a Red. I want to be King Griffey Jr., but when he wasn't a Red. I want to be 1995 King Griffey Jr., against 1995 David Cone.
Oh, interesting. David Cone. You pulled that one out, Doug Gray.
There's a very specific moment between those two in the 1995 playoffs that I'm just imagining, and it was wonderful, and it was glorious. I want to be that version of King Griffey Jr. on that very specific day.
I like it. Now, there are a few that I was thinking about. Number one was Adam Dunn. Obviously, we already talked about him. I thought about, like, Joe Morgan, maybe. Frank Robinson, you know, seemed like that'd be a great one.
Those would be good picks, yeah.
All good picks. Instead, here's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go with 1983 Rafael Landestoy. Cincinnati Reds bench warmer Rafael Landestoy.
That's a different direction.
Oh, man, he's great. Look at his baseball card. He looked like he just drank about 10 Schlitz, as we've already discussed. This quarantine's really got in. But anyway, I'm going to take Rafael Landestoy, and the pitcher it's going to be against is going to be Satchel Paige. Not because I want to hit against Satchel Paige, but man, I would love to have seen Satchel Paige pitch.
I mean, I definitely understand Satchel Paige in this scenario.
Okay, I'm going to go
sure,
with...
I'm not sure about your hitter.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Joe Morgan.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be honest. Joe Morgan was up there. And the other guy that I was thinking was another unique batting stance kind of guy, Eric Davis.
Mm.
Just the quickness and the ferocity of his swing is just... Oh, I love it.
87 Eric Davis.
That'd have been fun.
That'd be fantastic. Absolutely. You know, I probably would have taken Dunn, just left-handed hitter against the right-hander Paige, but Satchel Paige is striking Adam Dunn. I love Adam Dunn, but he's striking Adam Dunn out. I mean, he just is. One time out of, you know, 10 or 15, Dunn may get hold of one.
I mean, maybe if you went with like 58-year-old Satchel Paige rather than, you know, prime Satchel Paige, then Adam Dunn would have a better chance, but... Yeah, you're probably right.
I think 58-year-old Satchel Paige is probably better than 95% of pitchers that ever pitched in the big leagues. So I don't know. All right, Nathan Connor has a question for you, specifically you, Doug. He mentions Doug. Now, Nathan, what's the deal? Where's the loyalty, man? Why are you asking Doug a question, not me? After all I've done for you, Nathan Connor.
He knows what's good for him.
He does. He's a smart guy. Nathan asks, Doug, I'm looking forward to hearing you discuss the minor league baseball agreement news. Certainly a disappointment for lots of reasons. As a Florida resident, I hate to see the Reds lose all affiliations with Florida baseball. Losing Daytona stinks for me. Do you see any options for them to maintain a presence in the state? You want to kind of unpack that a little bit, Doug?
Okay, so as you've probably heard in the past, Major League Baseball wants to eliminate some minor league baseball teams moving forward. The original leaked story was that they wanted to go from 160 teams down to 120 teams, basically getting rid of all rookie ball that isn't played at the spring training complexes for each team. That means that the Reds would lose the Greenville Reds and the Billings Mustangs. But unfortunately for the Reds, two other teams in their farm system were on that list, the Daytona Tortugas and the Chattanooga Lookouts. Now, those teams would be replaced by other minor league teams, but they would lose out on having the ability to even choose those teams. It came out earlier this week that basically minor league baseball was going to agree to going from 160 to 120. Shortly thereafter, there was kind of a bit of a backtrack that, you know, they didn't technically agree to that yet. We'll see. I think that at this point it's going to happen. But there was an interesting wrinkle from the Associated Press that – if a team, say, like a major league team, for example, wanted to keep an additional farm system team, that as long as the two sides were able to agree on, you know, facility upgrades, that if they wanted to, they could do that. So in theory, the Reds could keep a team like the Daytona Tortugas around. It would have to be a separate kind of approval process. But yes, it technically could be possible based on the rumors we're hearing now. Nothing is final at this point. Even the list of teams that are quote unquote on the chopping block is still kind of up in the air. Since we first saw the list of teams, apparently there has been some changes. JJ Cooper of Baseball America has talked about that, but we haven't seen a new list in which teams may have been, you know, added to the list and which teams are now off of the list. We don't know that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, let me just add that this is kind of a fluid situation, but I want to go ahead and Rich Brown had a question that also kind of touches on this. So let me just let you add that in as you finish your thoughts. Rich Brown, twirling his mustache in the bullpen, asks this question. Do you think the Reds got hit a little harder on the minor league baseball teams that are getting cut? Initial list had us losing both Daytona and Chattanooga. Why would we lose our A and AA teams? I especially think the Lookouts loss would stink. And I agree that would stink if that's where we end up. I don't know that we will, but do you think the Reds got hit a little harder, or is it just still too fluid to say that just yet?
I don't think that it really matters in the sense of how it affects the Reds versus the Cubs, because the Reds are still going to have a single A, an advanced A, a double A, and a triple A team. They just may not be the current teams that they have now. What part of the plan is that they want to cut down on travel. So we're probably going to see the remaining teams that do still exist, the 120 or whatever it's going to be, the leagues that they're in now, they may not exist anymore. You know, the Southern League may still be the Southern League, but it won't have, you know, the same number. It won't have 14 teams. It may be a 10-team league, and they may add a third double A team or a league and have 10 teams in that league, and then 10 teams in the Texas League. They really do want to cut down on the amount of travel these teams are doing. So the idea is that they're going to have more leagues that are a little bit smaller than the ones they have now. And so I think that there's going to be a massive restructuring of which of the remaining teams are in which leagues. And even some teams may be changing levels that they're at, depending on how these leagues work out. You know, a team that's in double A right now may move down to single A. A team that's in double A may move up to triple A, depending on how things play out. So I think that we're going to see a massive change in how all of minor league baseball works. Now, the Reds did get hit a little bit hard in the sense that four of their affiliates were on the original list, and I think that was the most for any team. But I don't really think that it matters too much in the grand scheme of things as far as how it affects the Cincinnati Reds. It just affects fans that, you know, could go visit the Chattanooga Lookouts to see the Reds, or the Daytona Tortugas to see the Reds, or, you know, Billings or Greenville.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, it's still nothing set in stone just yet, but and I hate even the idea of it, because I hate the idea of, you know, I grew up in an area that where the Appalachian League has been around forever, and those places are just not going to have teams. I mean, at least the vast majority of them. I haven't seen all the latest projections, but I presume that every one of those little towns, and I hate it because it's always been fun to have professional teams in those towns. But frankly, I think I would probably agree somewhat with Joe Farsing, who had another question. Doug, a lot of questions for you on minor league baseball here today.
Well, it is what I do, Chad. That's so true. I guess that does make sense.
Exactly. They knew your expertise was coming. So piggybacking on these questions, Joe Farsing asks, I see the contraction of minor league teams as a necessary thing. Six rosters full of players vying for the majors seems incredibly bloated and inefficient. I live here in Cincinnati, so I don't have a romantic view or experience the small town appeal or charm, short of going to a few Florence Freedom, now y'all's, games. I know there are a lot of moving parts to pull everything off, but to me, this is a no-brainer. And Joe's question is, do you have thoughts on the greater implications? And I'll let you say if there's anything you want about that, Doug. But for me, I just think it's an incredibly inefficient, I don't like it at all, but I think it's an incredibly inefficient system. And I think if any league were starting today and trying to decide the best way to develop players, I can't believe that they would set up a system with these far-flung teams all over the place. I mean, I see the argument for it being a kind of a bloated, inefficient thing, as Joe puts it, but I don't like it. So anything else you want to say about that, Doug?
Yeah, I think you can make the argument for both sides. And I mean, there are major league teams that are making the argument on both sides. You know, some teams like Houston Astros think that there are far too many teams in their farm system chain. On the flip side, you've got teams like the Yankees and Reds who in recent years have gone out and tried to add more teams. They see it as the more players you've got, the better your chances are of finding guys. Whereas, you know, a team like the Astros would rather, you know, quote unquote, focus on the guys that they do have and, you know, give those guys a little bit extra attention. I personally can see both sides of it. For me, I think that I'd rather take more chances, that I'd rather have 275 chances than 175 chances. But that's just me. I think that, you know, having the opportunity to, you know, every few years have that guy that never would be in a farm system of 175 players, you know, break out and be able to get something out of a player like that, I think there's value there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't disagree necessarily with you at all, but I just, I don't know. The Branch Rickey, when he started what we call the modern minor league system, his idea was quantity will equal quality. Let's get as many as we can, and you know, the cream will rise to the top, and we'll have more than everyone else. So I think that makes sense, too. So I don't know what the answer is. One last Patreon viewer mail question comes from Hooper Powell, who just got it into us under the wire. Hooper asks, what do you think of starting September 1st in Arizona and playing 81 games? Is it realistic? There's no guarantee that NFL, NHL, and NBA will be having seasons in the fall and winter. Also, do you see in the next 5 years smaller markets being able to realistically compete with less fans in the stands? Well, has that been something that's even been suggested starting September 1st and playing 81 games? I don't see that as being particularly realistic.
I don't think that you could start that late and play that many games. I mean, 81 games in 3 months, I mean, that's a lot. And then you still have to play the playoffs. I think if they were going to start that late, they'd honestly do something like maybe 40 or 50 games.
Right, so I was going to say 50 and then have maybe even a shortened playoff.
Yeah, so I think that's probably a little bit too late of a date to play that many games. I think that, you know, you probably have to start in early August if you're going to play that many games and then still have a general idea of a normal playoff situation, which I don't think we're going to get anything normal at all this year. But, you know, short of doing a round robin kind of tournament and only like 30 regular season games, I don't think that we could start that late.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, if you told me that they only could start after September 1st, I might drop my prediction from 100% down to 97.2%.
Can I get the math breakdown on that one?
I was told there would be no math.
Fair enough.
Hooper also, his other part of his question, do you see in the next 5 years smaller markets being able to realistically compete with fewer fans in the stands? And, you know, I think if it were 5 years like this or 5 years of playing without fans in the stands, yeah, I think it's a real huge problem. I don't think there's any chance that's going to be the case, frankly, over the next 5 years. I think people's memories are crazy short, and we're all going to forget. You got to wash your stupid hands. You don't need to be, you know, shaking hands, and, you know, you don't need to be up on, even if it's just the regular flu that we're talking about. People should have been doing this stuff anyway, but I think that we're going to, not completely, nothing's going to be the same again, I don't think, during our lifetimes, totally. And I don't know what the new normal is, but I don't see any chance they're going to be playing sports with no fans in the stands going forward.
You know, they've kind of addressed this a little bit. I shouldn't say addressed. They've discussed it. It hasn't been for, you know, the next 5 years, so to speak. But, you know, one of the things is if they do play baseball games, that they would do more revenue sharing among the television contracts between teams when there's no fans in the stands. Because, you know, there are teams like the Dodgers that get over $200 million for their television contract per year, whereas, you know, some teams are still getting $25 million for their contracts.
Yeah, so the point is that they're not as dependent on game day revenue.
Correct. And so one of the discussions was that, you know, hey, maybe we're going to have to rework how we do revenue sharing because there are no fans in the stands to kind of distribute that money, which they've been doing forever. And they do redistribute the television money a little bit, but it would be a much more quote-unquote fair way to distribute the television money among the local TV contracts if teams can't put, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40,000 fans in the seats every night. And I think that would be something that if we don't get fans back in, you know, the next couple of years in the way that we have in the past, that would be something they would explore, because, you know, it is good to have all the teams in baseball being able to quote unquote survive. You know, if teams start being able to or not being able to, you know, make payroll, that's a problem. And so I think that they would kind of all do, you know, as crazy as this sounds, doing something that's quote unquote good for everyone. They would do that.
Yeah,
at least in the short term. So right. Because it's not going to work if you have to, you know, go from 30 teams to 22 teams because, you know, the Reds and the Brewers can't make payroll anymore because, you know, they've got 8,000 fans a night, but they've got contracts that have been running, you know, for the last couple of years.
Three more questions. We'll run through these kind of quickly. I think you're right, Doug, that something would have to give on that. But let's get through these last three. These come from twitter.com/redlegradio. Our first question, viewer mail question, comes from Dane Dameron. Dane Dameron, the head football coach of the University of Virginia's College at Wise. What do you think about that, Doug Gray?
I believe you.
He's a fine football coach, and I think he's trolling me here, Doug.
Well, you know, I like him a little bit more already.
Yeah, his question is, if you had the choice to see Johnny Bench or Wayne Krenchicki play, who would you choose?
Well, I mean, I know who I'd choose, and I know who you'd choose, and they're not the same answer, so I'm going to take Johnny Bench.
Well, I did choose Wayne Krenchicki, evidently.
Of yes,
course,
you did.
If you've listened to the podcast any amount of time, you know that story, how my very first game I went to see Johnny Bench play in his final season, and he sat the bench in favor of my nemesis, Wayne Krenchicki. Now, Coach Dameron had some interesting comments about Riverfront Stadium on Twitter the other day. Doug, how much time did you spend at Riverfront Stadium?
not as much as I would have liked to. I probably 20 games or so before they blew it up.
Wasn't it glorious though?
I feel like there's a lot of nostalgia there. Yeah,
that's what
I'm not sure that glorious is the right word, but very nostalgic about it.
That's what the coach and I were kind of talking about. You know, yeah, it was kind of a dump, but man, it was our dump. So, all right, Mike Petrie asks at I'm the NDP on Twitter.com. Hash Brown viewer mail, seeing Larkin bat leadoff in the Red Leg Radio series that we just recapped earlier, it led me to this question. Was Larkin the best potential leadoff hitter in Reds history who didn't really lead off very often? He batted number one in the lineup just fewer than 20% of his plate appearances. So was Larkin the best potential leadoff hitter in Reds history who didn't really lead off very often? Of course, he led off for that 1990 team, so we remember him there, but he ended up batting middle of the order later in his career. But I don't think he's my answer for the best potential leadoff hitter in Reds history who didn't really lead off very often.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say.
Oh, my goodness.
Douglas.
Chad, you go.
All right. Joey Votto. That's who I say. Joey Votto would have been the best leadoff hitter in Reds history who's never really led off. He's got the best on-base percentage of any player in Reds history. So that's my answer. What's yours?
Well, you know, you make a good argument there. I'm going to go in a probably slightly different direction, but I don't know exactly how accurate it is. So you can feel free to correct me here, but I'm looking at the stats right now, and Joe Morgan didn't bat leadoff nearly close to the majority of the time in his career.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Joe Morgan, I mean, he didn't quite get on base as much as Joey Votto, but it's pretty close.
Almost, yeah.
And, I mean, he's a guy who could run the bases really well, too. And in theory, that's what a lot of teams look for in a leadoff guy. So I'm going Joe Morgan.
Similar to Larkin, you know, he ended up basically during those big Red Machine years, especially 75, 76. He was a middle of the order hitter. So, because he had all that power, he was great. So, all right, one last viewer mail question, then we'll get out of here. Doug Gray. This one comes from at Ono Coop. You know Coop?
Oh, boy.
Coop, the host of the Hunt for Reds October podcast.
Shout out Coop.
Oh, yeah, shout out Coop. Always an adventure. Shout out to Unc Ram as well, I guess. Hash Brown viewer mail. Is it true that you can request trial by combat in Virginia? Now, I know you're not a legal expert, Doug, but I'm going to ask you if you don't know the answer to that, I'm going to ask you to make a guess. Is it true that you can request trial by combat in Virginia?
I hope that it's true, but I suspect that it's not.
The answer is, it is true. You can request trial by combat in Virginia. How do you think I became a judge?
Ooh, I'm going to guess that you became a judge by beating up a 47-year-old man who is definitely someone who would also beat up our friend Phil.
Yeah, I killed a guy.
Yeah, well, sometimes you got to do what you got
to
do.
I straight murdered a guy to get this job, and they are going to remove me from the bench before the week is up.
Before this even gets published, you are going to be gone.
I'm done, so enjoy it while it lasts. All right, this is Red Leg Nation Radio, episode number 320. That's all for tonight. We've gone longer than I thought we would, but which is a good thing. We're talking dumb stuff, and it's always fun. Trying to give you a little bit of something, a little diversion, something to laugh at, something to enjoy during this crazy time in our world. Any final thoughts for us, Doug?
I mean, not necessarily for me, but for most of our listeners, who I assume are also probably Bengals fans. Let's hope they don't screw this draft up.
Absolutely. You know how to subscribe to the podcast. I'm not going to tell you more about that. Go to Patreon and support us if you want to. You don't have to. This podcast is free, but we have a lot of other fun stuff over there, so feel free to do that. Go to redlegnation.com and redsminorleague.com every single day. I need you all to pledge to me that you're going to go every single day, especially throughout this time. For Doug Gray and Joe Burrow, this is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app, and join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.